Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
I don't know why I sounded like that. I sounded a little bit like Ricky.
I think you know exactly why you did it, Roger. You're a collaborator. What can I say?
As are you. And as is true. As is Amos.
Oof.
The fourth one appears, or the fifth one appears.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's the fourth one because Joe's not here.
We all know Joe's a myth.
When people say the man, the myth, the legend, Joe's the myth part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, I'm sure he'd like to be referred to as a man as well, but I'm not here to judge.
Man, myth, or legend.
Listen,
choose one.
What is happening?
If popular variety shows on TV have taught me anything, all of us are judges. Whether you're a good singer, whether you're a good dancer.
Sorry, y'all. I was having some very weird audio piped in. I have since moved it.
We were just having a really silly conversation.
That was just Roger.
I don't think it was. I mean, unless you do a really good woman voice.
Hi.
No, is
oh Roger, do you do audio?
So something really weird is happening with this computer. It's been going on for a while and I kind of ignored it, but first of all, it doesn't go to sleep. Even though I'm like, it should go to sleep, you know? I don't want things burned into the screen, you know, over the weekend, you know, when I don't use it.
You don't like that ticker tape.
What's that?
How long have you had it?
About 5 years.
Yep, time for a refresh.
I would audiobook. How would I do the various voices? They would all sound some variation of me.
Well, yeah.
You're the
unknown. Well, no, you do your own audiobook.
If you're a good voice actor, it shouldn't sound like you, right?
I don't know. Some people might want that.
The man of 1,000 voices that all sound like, you know, Mel Blanc or Roger.
He's the man of 1,000 Rogers. Roger Chang.
Opening scene.
Picture.
Bedroom. Half-naked man. Saunters.
You're not reading
bedroom.
A screenplay.
Oh.
It's not how an audiobook works.
Why is the half-naked man opening the story? Good grief.
You got to have a hook.
Why aren't more stories starting off with a half-naked man?
Oh, no.
On the other hand, if you opened a book and it said... Opening scene, a half-naked man saunters across the bedroom. That's an attention-grabbing statement.
Yeah, you're like, what is the format of this book? Who is this?
And why does he saunter, not stride across in a very, you know, Tom Selleck fashion?
Well, I think the saunter, the strut, it's not. Sometimes it's just in the eye of the beholder.
It's kind of the same thing with a different mood.
There we go. Goodness gracious. Google Docs has given me such problems today.
I would also point out half naked does not mean like a contiguous half of you has to be naked. It could just be 50% of your skin surface. I can't even get to this dumb point. 50% of your skin surface would be naked.
Well, so it could I, just I find be like it, your legs. I find it interesting.
So if you were naked, in the sun wearing a tank top and shorts, you're half of your body is naked. You're naked.
I'm just saying you could wear like a mini sarong and qualify as half naked. That would be my point.
What if you're full nude except for the cape hanging from your neck?
I'm sorry?
What if you're full nude but you have a cape hanging from your neck so the entire back is covered?
I'm just saying, an unqualified half naked could mean a lot of things to a creative mind. If I was staging based on that direction.
Hold on. What's a qualified naked? If it's unqualified, what's a qualified?
Let's qualify nudity.
Half naked from the waist up.
This seems
would
to be
a
the
qualified.
Time.
Would qualify the portion of half nudity is my point.
So that'd be. A
I'm so glad we're making Tom proud on this Monday afternoon.
Who's Tom?
Shape up.
Tom Selleck?
Yeah.
Tom Selleck.
And the guy mustache. Without a mustache?
I would like to make him proud.
Actually, you know what? We should see if you can do a I guess he wouldn't do it. Tom Selleck. Like have Tom Selleck doing DTNS. But he'll do it in the style of Magnum PI.
Don't don't know. Maybe he would. We've never asked.
We hit that Patreon goal.
We'll get Tom Selleck.
Selleck level.
Tom Selleck will be the face of our merchandise.
It'll be the Ferrari level of the Ferrari patron level.
I mean, I can't think of anything better.
He actually won't be on the show, but you will get a Tom Selleck NFT, which you can display.
Maybe like a Valentine's Day tie-in where it's like, do you like Tom Selleck? Mm-hmm. Did your mom like Tom Selleck? My mom
did. What if we just got Tom Selleck to read the mid-show promo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet he's on
like,
Fiverr.
Hey, I'm Tom Selleck.
Have you ever thought about sending a topic idea to the show?
Why don't y'all join our Discord?
We could get him on Cameo, get him to record some promos.
Well,
come on.
So I was thinking that he could totally promo, like, and here's Tom to promo our new, you know, whatever, and it's Tom Selleck.
Oh, my God. I would lose my britches. Not literally.
Mm-hmm. I would. Again, that would be more of a qualified half-naked.
Yes. Yes, losing my bitches. In the mind, I'm still clothed.
That's a different patron level.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what does Tom Selleck do where the rest of us are like, half naked? Okay, that's what we're doing.
I mean, if the people speak, who am I to judge them?
I have a rodent problem at my house. I am punchy.
Oh. Tom Selleck, come and drive over to her place and solve her problem.
Oh, or rodents. Just like, I would make him a grilled cheese sandwich and be like, thank you for coming. That would be like very fun for me. Did we not all watch Magnum P.I.?
I feel like serving any Magnum celebrity P.I. dairy is a no-no. I don't know why.
Is it big?
Yeah, no, it's something you should ask about beforehand. Yeah.
Lactose intolerance is a thing in Hollywood.
Yeah, I think so.
In the world, I think. It's in the
world. In my house. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I go like oat milk.
I mean,
smoothie.
It might be in my house, but I'm just going to do it and suffer.
Yeah, it's true.
You know,
Sarah, what kind of bread are we talking for a grilled cheese sandwich in the Lane household?
I go with a sourdough.
Ooh, okay.
You know, sourdough with some good cheese, maybe some onions.
Onions,
okay.
Yeah. Tomato soup.
Oh, the best.
Well, I mean, now it's moving away from it.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically a full on.
We've thought about this, Rich. Yeah. We've thought about this.
What so if
I have a bad experience with grilled cheese sandwiches from second grade, so I don't eat grilled cheese sandwiches, but
it
oddly enough,
the roof of your mouth?
No, I explosively vomited it out shortly after lunch. But if you take
a
slice of
memory.
Ham and grill it just a little bit on each side and throw that in there, it's different enough that my body doesn't have that impulsive rejection.
I
love that you brought this up,
Eamon.
Yeah,
because
we didn't realize this.
Just yesterday, it was Sunday. I had, there was a whole thing going on at the house. Story for another time. But let's just say it was a meltdown. And I was like, what would be like the most fun thing I can eat today just to give myself some pleasure? Ham and cheese. Ham and cheese panini.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a place down the street that does a really good one. And boy, was that good.
What kind of bread was that on?
A panini.
Bread.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I think it was a sourdough panini. I think.
I like a seedy rye for a grilled cheese.
Seedy.
Also good. Yeah.
But sourdough is solid. Rock solid choice. Can't go wrong.
Unless you... Pardon me, don't like the sourness. And some people don't, you know?
The doughiness.
Right? Yeah, where you're like, did you not cook this?
I wanted this on naan.
Is this why you're always cutting holes into it?
It's just kind of a strange grilled cheese. Seems like it should be cooked.
I remember I worked at Steak and Shake.
Ungrilled
and they have a grilled cheese on their menu, and they had a very specific way you were supposed to place the two slices of cheese onto the sandwich so that one slice had the edges of the cheese draped over the side bread. Of the bread for optimal appearance. And that made me realize I never want to work in food service for the rest of my life.
So how long did you work there?
About a month. And then I lied and said I had to go to school. And I said bye.
What was weird was at the place I went to, I will not out them. I actually really like this place, but you go in there and it's a small shop, you know, small deli, you know, they've got a little coffee bar and a couple, you know, you could like buy hot sauce or something if you wanted to, but it's small. Mm-hmm. And I said, I want that ham and cheese panini. And they were like, okay, let's give you the, you know, the thing that will, light up when your order is ready. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I'm going to sit right here next to where.
Real quick for you, Sarah.
You just took my money. What's that?
We'll still need a code open.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
So like that ham and cheese. It must be cool.
At the,
well, it was just funny because I was like, I'm trying not to look into your eyes.
But I have nowhere else to look.
But like, I'm the only one here. And like, why would we need this like buzzer thing? Like, this isn't the Cheesecake Factory. Like, you know where I am. I'm right here.
I don't know. I haven't been to the Cheesecake Factory in 12 years.
Well, you're not going to go anytime soon.
No. Sorry, I have something.
I went to the Cheesecake Factory about 4 months ago with BioCow and my wife.
Oh, nice.
Ooh, risque.
Yeah.
Is there a Cheesecake Factory in Alaska? Or
no, this is in Washington.
Got it.
Yep. It's kind of halfway between my wife's house and BioCow's house.
He lives in a non-industrialized area of Alaska. Hence no factories.
Cheesecake or otherwise.
Yes.
It's a boat-to-table service.
Yeah.
Well, we don't got no fancy cream cheese up in here. I don't know why there's a crawfish salesman with
a crawfish salesman.
I don't know.
What? Up in Alaska. I mean, that's what you fish for when you're in Alaska, crawfish. All that freshwater crayfish in the Bering Sea.
My knowledge of your ways is mysterious.
Yeah. A little too on the pincer.
The Cheesecake Factory. I mean, you just got to love a 22-page menu. Or they're like, what do you want? What's your thing? We have it all. And we'll make it for you.
It's the Baker's Square kind of model of
on steroids.
Of restaurant where it's all about that, you know, they're like, listen, we know what you're gonna have at the end here. Okay. Yeah. We've established this in the name, but you got to go a long way to get there.
Well, and this is the thing, at least when I've eaten there, the food was just okay. It wasn't like outstanding, but it's enough that
It's something for everyone to the point where it's like, who's really going to go away mad?
Yeah. Like, it's one of those things where people aren't going to come up like, man, I really want to go back to Cheesecake Factory because they had awesome burgers. It's like, where you all want to eat? It's like a Cheesecake Factory. It's like, yeah, I can eat there. Then you all go.
This is why I maintain Raising Cane's is the greatest restaurant of all time.
You and your chicken fingers.
No.
Because.
I don't know this place. Tell me more.
It's a fried chicken place where the only option is the amount of chicken you want and the location of bread on said chicken. Do you want the bread on the side or around the chicken? Only choice you have.
Are you being facetious, Sarah?
No, this is literally you can choose.
No.
Do you want Sarah, is this the place in Vegas?
Yeah, we ate there in Vegas.
I love that place.
There's one type of chicken. There's two different sides. You can have fries or slaw. And everything comes with greasy bread that, by the way, looks like trash and is delicious.
Mm-hmm. Little Texas toast that I don't think either Roger or I ordered when we went there. And the person who took our order was like, well, you have that up. And we were like, well, I don't know. We got a lot of other things.
You chose poorly.
Well, what's interesting is like, all the choices you get really is just the amount, right? It's not the difference. There really are no food options other than do you want 6, 12, or like a party platter of the same chicken fingers? They're good. They're good fingers.
They were good.
You just have to be in the mood for
it's a very singular palate.
Hold on. I'm doing it. Okay, hold on.
They're supposedly making one out in not Burbank, down in Burbank, over by CBS.
Oh, we're getting a second Sonic.
Oh, so if only Sonic's food was better, it would actually go there more than just once every day.
That's the point of Sonic, though.
Sonic food
is the. I get it. It's the Daily beverage, but how? I mean, I don't know. It seems like a long way just to go for a very flavorful, custom bespoke soda.
You know, I don't care about the soda. It's not a long way to go to Daily Tech News.
Well, you know what is it?
Down to the bottom.
All right.
All right. Hold your horses. Hold your horses. I am.
And Roger, no, you go to Sonic because the trash food is cheap. That's why you go to Sonic.
You know, is it good?
No.
No, oh. It's terrible.
It's Philly, really? But it's cheap.
A lot of people like Sonic. Okay, yes. But we'll come back to this
up after the show.
Let's. All right. I'll count myself in.
Yep.
In 3, 2. Coming up on DTNS, can Facebook turn this whole downturn thing around? Twitter's trying to make DMs better. And let's talk about Microsoft making the world a better place. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, February 7th, 2022. From Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
From lovely Cleveland, Ohio, I'm Mitch Straffolino.
And I'm Roger Chang, the show's producer.
Want to remind everybody, there is a longer version of the show. It's called Good Day Internet. Some of you have already listened to this. But if you haven't and you're interested, go check it out. Patreon.com/DTNS.
And of course, we want to give a big thanks to our top patrons, including Pat, DeGracia A. Daniels, and Erwin Sturr.
Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
ByteDance is getting in on the booming fast fashion market, launching the site Demon Studio. The site claims to serve over 100 countries with a focus on women's fashion. The site doesn't name direct ties to ByteDance, but sources tell TechNote that the company's e-commerce business lead, Kang Zeyu, is heading the project.
Amazon confirmed it will increase the maximum base pay for corporate and tech employees from $160,000 to $350,000 in an effort to recruit top talent and also retain employees. This brings base pay more in line with other large tech companies, and Amazon will keep existing restricted stock units and cash compensation incentives. This reflects a tight market for tech talent, with a Comp TIA analysis of Labor Department employee data finding an 11% increase in unfilled IT job openings in the U.S., up to roughly 340,000.
U.S. FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel informed Congress that network service providers applied for $5.6 billion of reimbursements for ripping and replacing equipment deemed insecure by the U.S. government. This mostly applies to equipment from ZTE and Huawei. In September 2020, the FCC estimated the effort would cost $1.8 billion, and Congress allotted $1.9 billion as part of the supply chain reimbursement program.
Tobii, that's T-O-B-I-I, says it's in talks to provide eye tracking technology for Sony's next-gen VR headset. Now, Sony previously confirmed the PlayStation VR 2 would use eye tracking, but didn't say much else about a partner or even how it would work. The headset will reportedly also use camera-based inside-out tracking to detect head and controller movement.
The price comparison provider PriceRunner sued Google for 22 billion kroner, that's about 2.4 billion US dollars, in Stockholm's Patent and Market Court, saying the company manipulated search results in favor of its own shopping services. This follows an EU ruling from November that found Google violated antitrust laws for preferring its own shopping services in search.
All right, Rich, let's talk a little bit more about the future of Google Stadia.
Yeah, I got an interesting report from Business Insider. Their sources say Google demoted its entire Stadia project internally and is now focused on providing a streaming backend for other companies rather than attaching games to the Stadia service itself. Google calls this backend Google Stream, and it's already reportedly being used to power Peloton's first video game, Lane Break, that was announced, and it's in early access right now. AT&T confirmed it used Stadia tech to power its browser-based version of Batman Arkham Knight last year, and Capcom and Bungie both reportedly were looking into building platforms on Google Stream. Of course, we'll see that with the Sony acquisition if that goes through. The unit now prioritizes Google Stream proof of concept work and white label deals, kind of like what they were doing with AT&T, with sources saying about 20% of the focus is now being put into the consumer Stadia platform. So we've kind of heard rumblings that, hey, Stadia wasn't hitting the targets. We've seen them kind of spin down their independent game or their own game development studio for Stadia. But Sarah, you know, is this will this be the Google Glass of game streaming, where we don't hear about it, but it's used in a lot of places that we just maybe don't think about in terms of an equivalent Google product?
It might be. I mean, Google Glass, depending on who you are, if you are a consumer who is excited about the future of it, you say, what a spectacular failure. Google Glass is alive and well, as are competitors in the same market. And we will see more of that going forward and still inch back into the consumer market. With Stadia, the people who care about gaming more than I do have always said from the beginning, like, Stadia is just, it's just okay. What is Google doing here? Google cannot compete with the big guns when it comes to gaming. And whether or not that is true, and certainly, you know, depends on who you talk to, this seems very smart. It seems very smart on Google's point, on Google's end, to say, listen, we can provide platforms that can provide all sorts of fun experiences for all sorts of other platforms. And, you know, we'll work more on the back end, and we'll stop trying to compete with other companies that are, frankly, just doing it better, at least with market share.
Yeah, if you're a AAA gamer, and I guess you're really bullish on cloud streaming, AAA games, like, not, I guess, great news that there's one less player in the market potentially long term. This is not, they're not spinning this down. Stadia as a service still exists for consumers. But I don't think long term this is necessarily like that horrible for Google. Like, being the AWS of game streaming, where a lot of the issues people were having were for AAA titles, where like reaction times are like super critical, and you know it, like having any kind of lag and that kind of stuff causes a problem. When you're doing something like, you know, what they're doing with Peloton, with Lane Break and that kind of stuff, like, those kind of experiences aren't as critical for, like, you know, millisecond latency as it comes to that. And if they can provide that, that provides them a very steady, you know, potentially provides them a very steady, kind of revenue source that they can back end. I mean, again, thinking of AWS as an example, not the worst position to be in terms of, profitability and seemingly no end of customers for it.
Well, let's talk about Meta and Meta's users, or lack thereof. Just kidding. They still have billions of users. But Meta's earnings report last week made headlines for showing a decrease in Facebook's daily active users for the first time. Gave a lot of people pause. Is this the beginning of the end? Still an ongoing conversation, but the company could face another decrease in users, like not providing services to all of the EU. That would be a big deal. And Meta's annual report to the Securities and Exchange Commission, Meta emphasized the need for a new data legal framework, to govern the transfer of data from EU users to the US, saying, quote, complex and evolving US and foreign laws could harm its business. Now, the Court of Justice for the European Union invalidated the Privacy Shield data transfer framework in July of 2020. It's been, you know, a year and a half now. Meta now uses standard contractual clauses, also known as SCCs, for data transfers, basically boilerplate conditions that have been pre-approved by the European Commission. However, back in 2020, the Court of Justice of the European Union ruled that U.S. law did not ensure an adequate level of protection, particularly around mass surveillance in the U.S. Meta received a freeze on this order, and Meta's use of SCCs is being reviewed in the Ireland Data Protection Commission. Meta expects this decision in a few months. We will see. Now, if you're Meta, if the decision doesn't go your way, the lack of a framework means you could be hit with a substantial GDPR fine. if a new framework isn't adopted and SECs are successfully challenged in the EU, Meta says, we will likely be unable to offer a number of our most significant products and services, including Facebook and Instagram, in Europe. That is potentially bad news. Rich, do you think that Meta is just kind of, you know, fluffing the whole thing here and making it sound worse than it is?
So the context of where they disclose this, I think, is super important to how, I guess, where Meta sees this kind of in their, you know, existential threat versus annoyance or something like that. Because we saw them be very public when Facebook was, or I'm sorry, when Apple was making changes to its app tracking transparency feature, taking their ads in newspapers, trying to get ahead of the public messaging on this. This comes from an like deep inside of an SEC disclosure document, an annual disclosure document that they have to file about things that could impact income and things that would impact investors. So the idea that they're putting it in there does mean that, at least in turn, like this isn't just saber rattling for the sake of getting a press release out there and trying to set the tone of the public conversation. This is, hey, we need to inform investors. This is a possibility. Now, where this gets interesting is, based on everything I'm seeing, I don't necessarily see there's something on the horizon that will solve all of these problems. They've tried several different kind of framework. You know, Privacy Shield is not the first data transfer framework that was out there, right? There is kind of a long history of these kind of agreements, these kind of frameworks being set up and then being invalidated by courts. And now we're seeing SECs kind of falling into that category as well. Confusing with SEC. But the idea that there's not something on the horizon that's kind of we just have to hold out until this thing gets approved by the EU or in the US or something like that. Basically, the complaint about the SECs is basically US privacy law would have to come up to the standards of European privacy law, which in all practical intents,
don't hold your breath.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I a lot of this sounds like posturing on Facebook's behalf to me, not on their behalf. It's Facebook doing it. Meta, I'm sorry. Still trying to get a hold of the two names, but yeah, I'd be very surprised if some agreement was not made in advance of Facebook and Meta's properties, Instagram, all just going dark in, you know, the many countries of Europe. I mean, not going to happen, but...
Meta has a huge financial interest in that not happening. And I think, very interestingly, we don't see WhatsApp mentioned even, you know, being potentially impacted by that, which obviously has a huge user... Not that Instagram or Facebook doesn't have huge user bases in the EU, and certainly don't want to lose either of those. But interesting that that's not part of it. This is one of those policy things where I feel like... In the long term, not having these kind of frameworks doesn't benefit a lot of businesses. So there is a lot of financial pressure, not just from Meta, but kind of from the tech industry or anyone that's dealing with data transfers, which is kind of all being held in legal limbo right now to figure this out. But it's surprising that in the story we didn't hear, and this is being hammered out as we speak, so it needs to get voted. Like, that component to that isn't here yet. I think it's a very remote possibility that Facebook and Instagram go dark, but they did feel like they had to disclose that as a possibility to investors, which is not insignificant.
Poor Meta. What an underdog.
Just having a rough, you know, rough 2022, you know?
Just think of the Meta.
All right. Well, speaking of social networks, Twitter announced it's testing an icon on iOS to send direct messages to a tweet's author directly from your timeline. Sending DMs right now requires going to a user's profile page. Twitter says users will still be able to close DMs entirely if they don't want to engage with unwanted DMs at all. So, why are some people upset about this feature being added or at least being tested? Well, as The Verge notes, one extra step to go to someone's profile to send a DM, which is generally how it's worked thus far, cuts back on harassment. This new feature would make harassment theoretically much easier, even if it makes it perfectly fine discourse easier as well. But as another Twitter user noted, when someone wants to harass you, they're going to tap that one extra step to DM you anyway. So, Sarah, you know, I guess where do we kind of come on, you know, this kind of addition to, I guess, obviously, what I imagine Twitter's trying to do is put DMs more front and center, not make everything a timeline conversation, right? Like being able to kind of sidebar stuff a lot easier. But the harassment angle, I think that's on Twitter, certainly a valid conversation to have.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I am, knock on all the wood, I don't feel like I have a harassment problem on Twitter of being personally harassed. You know, every once in a while there's a tweet that, you know, grinds somebody's gears. But the idea that I would have to, and my DMs are open. Anybody can DM me. Mostly it's spam. And I sort of look at it once in a while and whatever. But a lot of it is legitimate. And I just made that decision some time ago to, like, you know, just open it up. You know, floodgates are open. You let me know what you think. And I can choose to do with that information how I like. Mm-hmm. But if I felt as though I was being targeted for harassment, and many people on Twitter do feel that way and have felt that way for years, and have thought that the company has not taken appropriate steps to make people safe on that platform, then yes, this seeming like, oh, it's just one step. You know, I mean, if someone's going to harass you anyway, they're going to harass you, right? Like, what does it matter? But we all know that taking one little, you know, adding one little step on any journey online will weed out some people who go, it's too hard now, I don't care anymore. So I definitely get the idea of people saying, Twitter, this is a bad move. That said, to me, to be able to, because I don't know, I DM and get DM'd pretty regularly. I think, especially on the iOS app, I mean, I am a Tweetbot user, but so it's a little different for me. You know, my whole situation is a little different than if you're using one of Twitter's native apps, but it should not be a bad thing what they're doing. It's just that there's so much harassment on Twitter that the people who say, no, you're making a bad thing even worse, is you can't ignore that.
Well, the one thing I would say is this is a test. And the reason you test things is to see, like, hey, is this a good idea that explores conversation, or is this a horrible idea that makes this into an unlivable hellscape? So, like, I'm fine. I guess I'm fine with them testing a feature, because how else are you supposed to know? However,
sure,
this seems to go opposite to a lot of the ways that Twitter is trying to tamp down on harassment, which, you know, as Sarah, as you said, speed bumps do matter. Twitter's own research has shown that putting up, hey, are you sure you want to send this warnings? All that is clicking one extra button to say, okay, I'll send it. And yeah, maybe it makes you more aware, you know, maybe it takes you a second to think. But that speed bump, you know, Twitter has shown that that does have impact on the shape of discourse. And having to click through someone's profile, I would think, humanizes someone to a little bit more degree than anonymous comment that a reply that you don't like and that you want to reply to. If you have to click through their profile, maybe you see a picture of somebody's dog. Maybe you see you just see, like, even their bio of, like, hey, I'm a family person or whatever. I like dogs, whatever. I think that is a not insignificant speed bump to kind of contextualize the person that maybe you want to send something that's not so great to. So that is the most interesting to me, is that this seems opposite to what Twitter is kind of trying to do to fight harassment in other ways.
It does seem like Twitter is trying to help communication while also not really saying the big part out loud, mm-hmm. which is harassment is a really big problem. So the people who have experienced and do experience harassment are like, no, this is only going to make things worse. On paper, I was sort of like, oh, cool. Yeah, that makes sense. Sounds like a good feature. But you have to remember what Twitter's problem has been for years now, and has been, you know, dragged through the mud about not thinking about, people who have been harassed or are in positions of feeling marginalized. And, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff, you know, that is Twitter's problem. It continues to be Twitter's problem.
The one thing I will say is this feature does seem to appeal, like this almost feels like a request from brands where who they use DMs as their help desk and they're contacting people that are complaining about services. It'd be really nice if I had a DM button right there. I wonder if this, if either the feedback on this is, oh, this will only be a brand exclusive feature, or this was feedback from brands and Twitter is testing this with a wider community. That seemed like a logical use case for this kind of feature.
Well, listen, if you have thoughts on anything that Rich and I have talked about today, anything we might talk about on a future show, we want to know your thoughts. Please do email us. Email us at feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. All right. I don't exactly know when in the pandemic I decided that I was going to go all in on VR. But it was partly because I couldn't leave my house. I wanted friends. So in that same vein, at some point, many people also realized they wanted home fitness gear. Maybe they were weights. Maybe it was a treadmill. Maybe it was a Peloton. Peloton definitely rode that wave of interest, reaching a market value of $50 billion in January of 2021. We're just now 1 year past that time. How's it doing? Well, a competitive landscape and a somewhat reopened world have brought the company back down to earth, which now sits at an $8 billion valuation. That's still a lot of money, but a far cry from the $50 billion that we heard of January in 2021. So while the company denies its halted bike and tread production in the face of waning demand, CEO John Foley did say it was resetting its production levels for sustainable growth. That doesn't sound like it's saying a whole lot, but let's try to parse this. So what does a still pretty trendy brand, I know a lot of people who have Pelotons and like the platform very much, that combined with a market in flux mean? Might mean an acquisition. The Wall Street Journal sources say that Amazon is considering acquiring Peloton, but Amazon isn't the only one. The Financial Times sources say that Nike may also acquire the connected fitness company. Now, both companies have apparently discussed this internally. And as far as we know, nobody has approached Peloton about an acquisition formally yet. But given the early stage of both companies' interest, it would not be surprising to see other companies perhaps get into the mix. Rich, can you think of others?
Yeah, there was a investor out there that suggested this might make sense for Apple to do so. But I mean, there are
like a Fitness Plus thing.
Yeah, integrate that. And I could see, as a lifestyle brand, it very much that it, in that regard reminds me of acquiring Beats, right? Where it's a brand that has a lot of value to customers, a lot of customer loyalty and image associated with that brand, and then you can kind of build off of that, and kind of, you know, the difference is that before that, Apple was into audio devices, maybe not high-end audio headphones, stuff like that. Apple is already very much into the fitness world, I guess not the fitness device world, or at least the, you know, the bikes and the treads and that kind of stuff. So that would be a departure for them. I actually think it's interesting. I think Nike, in terms of like that same kind of lifestyle brand of these two companies, makes the most sense to me. Amazon has been kind of getting into more of very heavily into the quantified self, not necessarily like, hey, you're going to be looking at your personal trainer. A lot of it has been like, hey, we're going to give you apps and stuff for our wearables so that you can, you don't need the personal trainer. You can algorithmically get this in the app and stuff like that. But they are investing a lot into fitness, so it wouldn't surprise me entirely if they went ahead with this acquisition either.
I think Amazon makes the most sense here. I mean, you can buy anything on Amazon. You want to buy a $2,500 bike that then you have to pay a subscription for going forward? Listen, I am not poo-pooing the Peloton brand. I know a lot of people who like it. I am not personally a member of the crew, but think of how many little add-ons Amazon could sell if you were also buying that bike on the Amazon network.
Well, but for that same reason, I could see, first of all, obviously, it's like subscription revenue is like the meta narrative for all of tech right now, right? So there's no reason that Nike wouldn't also do that. I personally, I think Amazon's probably, just financially off the top of my head, I assume they have the money and the market presence to make that acquisition.
Well, and all of the third party stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that you could make this whole thing your own. I'm not sure Nike is in the position to be able to offer even, a portion of that, even though, yes, as far as fitness goes, Rich, I think Nike and Peloton actually are a better marriage. But you don't go to Nike.com to be like, hey, where do I buy my new sweatpants?
But you can the idea. Okay, so here's the question: if Amazon were to acquire it, do then we see a certain voice assistant start being integrated? It would be an Amazon product then at that point.
Oh and, man, I would love that.
So that's a value add for you.
Okay. I want to talk to all devices in my life, touch them only when necessary. But yeah, like imagine just being like Peloton, you know, crank up the resistance and it just would, and you don't have to touch anything because you're biking, you know, you're trying to bike.
We will have to see if there are more rumors and speculation going forward.
Indeed so.
Yes. Moving on, our next story, there's an interesting study released by Microsoft. They released their sixth annual Civility, Safety, and Interaction Online report. They released this as part of International Safer Internet Day. I hope you celebrated, Sarah. This surveyed teens and adults across 22 countries asking about experiences and interactions online. Survey results are used to generate a digital servility index score, or DCI. Lower the score, the higher the perceived level of online civility.
Ah, so you want a low score.
Yeah, it's like golf. You want the low score.
Yeah.
So the 2022 report found that the global DCI, and they do break this out by country as well, score was at 65%, the best since the survey began in 2016, and a 2% improvement since 2020. Sarah, I know you looked at the report quite a bit. Was there any kind of standout finding for you, kind of beyond that takeaway of, hey, it's lower than it's been?
Sure. First of all, yes, you know, lower than it's been sounds great. I, as a U.S. woman, I definitely, you know, what gave me pause was U.S. women experiencing 57% of risks. That includes consequences of your actions, worry that your actions will, you know, lead to a bad result, pain because of interactions. Mm-hmm. I stand with the women of the world. I'm a U.S. woman, so that's not great news, but it also is, I think, really cool of Microsoft to put a lot of this data out there and be like, here's what we're seeing. You know, and for the people who are in positions of power, or who at least care about the people in positions of power to you know, help those people do more, this is good. This is good overall, even if some of the data might not be, you know, a birthday party.
Yeah, this is one of those studies where, you know, the narrative is like, oh, online's worse than it's ever been. And everybody has to feel that same way. And it's like, oh, this is the data points that we need. Yes, this is a survey. So, you know, Microsoft knows how to do a survey. I'm assuming this is representative, taking a wide number of countries into account here. The big story for me, though, is like all the headlines I saw on this were online civility score, best it's been ever, best since 2016, best in 5 years, that kind of stuff. But like the second line of that is that this improvement is led by teen boys and adult males, men, I guess, as a category. They experience 5% less trolling, 3% a decrease in hate speech. That's great. Great for online civility. However, women experience almost 60% of all risk, an all-time high, which, like, again, kind of, yes, that top line figure, that's great. But even just drilling down a little bit into that, see that, I guess not all is well for everybody online. And again, that figure is global. In, like you said, in the U.S., that figure for women was 50, you know, accounting for 57% of risk. Overall, the U.S.'s score was at 58%, so significantly lower than the kind of global average. But that did increase 2% on the year as well. So I guess, you know, again, this is all about, for me, this is all about data points. This is all about, okay, like, you know, your sentiment and your feelings, that does matter for you and for your own mental health and how you interact with people. But it is important to get this context and to get that kind of stuff. Was there anything else that kind of stood out to you, Sarah?
Actually, yeah. So I know that particularly for everybody on the DTNS team and who is part of our audience who has kids or otherwise had to, you know, kind of figure out how to make the classroom be your house. 67% of folks in the U.S., so the U.S. specific, saying that online meetings and classes drove improved civility, meaning, you know, you have less people yelling at each other or, you know, otherwise making somebody feel small or making them feel unsafe kind of thing because the meetings were online. Now, on the surface, that makes sense because it's like, yeah, I mean, if somebody's threatening me and they're not right in front of me, that's a little safer, hopefully, feeling because they're, you know, on the other side of a Zoom call. But you hear so much of the opposite of how this is hindering, you know, learning and communication. And I think this just points to this whole conversation being a lot more nuanced.
Yeah. And the fact that the study showed that civility was better on in like online and classrooms and in meetings than in person actually speaks to like the power of like, oh, you're like talking to people, you know, you're like in an accountable group. That those the settings definitely matter. It's not just that it's online, like the setting where you're interacting online definitely matters when it comes to civility. So a lot of interesting findings in that report for sure.
Well, speaking of civility, we hope that on your next trip, you are a very civil person and you meet other civil people as well. Chris Christensen has a great recommendation for those of us who do love to learn more about the places we visit when we do.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. An interesting app, if you're looking for more information about your surroundings, is the Hear Hear app. And that is one of the worst app names to try and describe in audio. It's H-E-A-R-H-E-R-E. So here is in hearing, and then here is in not there. And the Hear Hear app, you can put in your destination and you can listen to audio snippets that have been recorded about things in that area. When I brought up my surroundings in the Hear Hear app, I learned some things about the local history of Cupertino, California. You will have to pay for some of these, but the first five you can get for free. So check it out. Hear Hear. And this is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
Oh, thanks, Chris. As always, I've not heard of this network before, but I love it. Great idea.
Lots of good stuff.
We would like to thank a few brand new bosses that we got over the weekend. Rob Arnold, Nick Papagiorgio, Rob Leslie Jr., and Rohan Pulikar all just started backing us on Patreon. Thank you for joining the team. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Rob. Yeah, two Robs. And thank you, Rohan. We also want to always extend a big thanks to our patrons. You make the show what it is every day. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you. Oh, and I guess we're at the end of our show. We're live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. If you'd like to find out more, you can do so at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We are back doing it all tomorrow with Rob Dunwood. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Before I forget, if you would like to submit show titles and vote on them, showbot.tv/DTNS, the number 2 is where to do both. Thank you in advance. I want to see some votes, y'all. Mm-hmm. Let's vote. Vote or die.
Showbot it up.
I always say that. Do you remember when P. Diddy was like, vote or die? It was like his thing.
P. Diddy did that on the campus of my college.
Oh. At
Case Western Reserve University because we were hosting the vice presidential debate that year.
Interesting. So it was kind of a, do you feel like the students were like, yeah, vote or die? Or did they think it was sort of
it like was more like
silly celeb stuff?
Diddy's here. Let's go check him out. He's at the Wade Oval. Let's
yeah, like,
go see
that's
what he's
cool.
Doing. Yeah, yeah, like that's, right? Yeah. I think someone had a sign hanging from a window. Was, you know.
If he had come to my school, I would have gone.
I didn't because I knew a lot of people would be there and I was uninterested.
Mm. Yeah. You were sort of on that first wave of don't get around too many unvaccinated people.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And like the stay away from groups, 6 feet away from groups of people. I was like, done. Thank you.
Gosh.
Yeah. I was like, thank you, CDC. Appreciate it.
Very early adopter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Social distancing.
Rich is like, how many people are going to be there? I'm not going to that.
Hard pass.
Yeah.
It's the Yogi Berra-ism of always crowded there. Nobody goes, you know, that kind of thing.
See, my thing is that I'm so little that mm-hmm. if I'm in a group with too many people that are taller than me, I get claustrophobic and I have to either be near the exit or I don't want to go at all. That includes music shows, rallies, anything, you know, all the things. As soon as I'm like, too many tall people, I'll be crushed. I'm not going. Yeah.
That's legit.
Yeah. It's just the way it goes.
We all accept our
reality.
Around, around crowds. Yes.
No, but growing up, one of my best friends, she's still one of my best friends, but when we were younger, she was tall, 6 feet tall. I am 5'2". And so, you know, everybody was like, Munjeff, haha, so fun. And there were like we used to like to go, you know, hang out at music shows. And she would like get in the mosh pit and just be like, throw me around. I don't care. It's fine. This is fun. And I was like, no, this is how you die. Like, I will be over on the side making sure you know where I am when we're ready to leave. Drinking my gin and tonic or whatever it was at the time. So, yeah. That's still how I feel to this day.
I feel that because there's a concert venue in town called the Agora, and there's a beautiful main area where everybody can congregate in front of the stage, and then there's a balcony, and I'm just like, I will see you guys, have fun here. I'm going right up to that balcony. I'm gonna be looking at all the instrument cables, and everyone can ignore me. I'll be up here.
Exits. Need to know where the exits are.
Rich, you and I both share an affinity for the photographic arts.
Yes.
I have found that one way of dealing with crowds is if I have my camera, it gives me license to float around the outskirts of the crowd. And that helps me not only enjoy the event because I'm not stuck in the crowd worrying about how to get out and everything else, but also gives me kind of almost a superposition of audiencehood where you almost feel like, because you have your camera and you're taking pictures of the event, you can go anywhere. So you don't necessarily feel as part of the crowd itself, and that helps with my social anxiety.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, because the camera's going there. I'm just escorting the camera there. I might as well use it while I'm there. Like, I have a reason to be in the crowd other than, I guess, the event, which is the whole reason. It's a very Roland Barthes camera lucida kind of point you have there, Amos. So I appreciate that. Very philosophical.
Yeah, it's like being on stage with a podium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I'm in a crowd with a camera, it's like my safety shield, my anxiety stopper.
Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you can't.
I got a job. I'm here doing my thing.
Yeah.
You know,
it gives you.
You want me to get a good picture, so you're not going to bug me.
Right.
Yeah.
And plus, it's amazingly easy to get past security if you have a big enough camera.
Yeah. And wear a vest. That combined with a vest. It's the the white truck effect. If you have like a blank white truck, you can get anywhere, and a clipboard, you can get anywhere. If you have a camera with a 70-200 on it, you can go into any event.
Yep. Yeah, that helped out when I was deployed a lot, because you know they wouldn't want people up on stage, things like that, and I'd be able to, you know, we'd have like a candle box came in to my deployed location, and all the PA guys, the public affairs guys, they didn't want to, like, you know, they wanted to be in the show. They didn't or watch the show. They didn't want to be working for the event. So they would just call me up and be like, hey, you want to go? Can you go do the event? And I'd be like, yeah. So, you know, I got to meet Coolio and Candlebox and
nice.
Shaggy.
Candlebox. I loved them.
That was
like such show. Like emo music for me.
Now they would have rocked
back in the day.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of one song. I can't now. I'm under too much pressure.
Yeah.
I have to look it up. I loved Candleblocks, though. That much I remember.
They, so when you're deployed, at least at the location I was at, you're only allowed to have 2 drinks a day. But a lot of the commanders, you know, the officers would be allowed to buy basically a bottle a month, and they would have to just ration that out themselves.
Mm.
Well, what they would do is they would hoard it, and then every so often they'd have like a community get together in the officers area and just get hammer smashed. They saved up for that event. So that after the Candlebox show, my commander came over and asked Candlebox to go with them to where the party was at. And we'd already been, you know, I'd already been hitting it off with the band, doing the pictures and everything else. So a little bit later, I just kind of meandered over that direction with a few of my friends. And the commanders immediately started telling us we shouldn't be there. And the band was like, well, if you're going to kick them out, we're going to leave. And so we got to sit there and party with all the commanders and get way drunker than we were legally allowed to by sofa arrangements. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. And then, of course, my commander calls me in our office a couple of days, like the next Monday. And it's like, all those pictures you took, where are they?
And aim.
Oh no, I thought it was me.
I thought it was a freeze.
I thought it was
kind of just all left us hanging on that one.
All the pictures were at like Dutch angles, like, you know, as the night went on, less able to hold a steady hand.
This is so funny. So I looked up Candlebox on YouTube, and this may be one of many different uploads, but usually like the upload that has the most views is the top one. And like Far Behind, remember that song? It like doesn't even have 400,000 views from, you know, this is a band that was like in the mid 90s. Didn't mean to treat you
should. I mean, they did go quadruple platinum.
But like, okay, I demand more people listen to Candlebox.
Program a bot that just listens to Far Behind 24/7. Get that listen
count. It's a good song.
I'm not saying it's not.
I mean, it's a song for a certain time, right? But it, I don't know. I like it.
My emo-y days were more Get Up Kids and Dashboard Confessional, but, you know, to each their own.
Well, that's a little later.
That is a little later. I'm a little, you know.
You're a little younger, and that's okay.
I'm from a different time.
Nobody's wrong here. Nobody's wrong.
I'm happy that Candlebox served that same need.
Oh, a friend of mine, I don't even know if we talked about this last week because I got so up in arms about it. A friend of mine was like, Pearl Jam is just like not that good. And I was like, okay. Cracks knuckles. Let me make you a playlist, and you better like lay down on your bed with like headphones and listen to these 8 songs and come back and you tell me they're not good.
You'll flip that tape over.
And that wasn't even my favorite band.
I mean, like, let me ask you this.
By playlist, you just have to tell them to listen to the album 10.
No, there's good stuff on Vitalogy.
So let me ask you this. Hold on. Does your friend enjoy grunge, or is that a genre that they're very lukewarm to? Because that would inform whether or not they like.
He was, you know, sort of like, yeah, I know these bands, but I just never thought Pearl Jam was all that great. And I'm like, I don't know, man, they're pretty great.
I mean, you really have to be in that. What I've noticed is people who aren't into that style of music generally are more dismissive of
the whole thing.
Well, especially the tentpole bearers of that genre, whether it's country, pop or whatever.
Yeah, like maybe, maybe you never listened to Nirvana, which I'm like, okay, I mean, you're missing out, but that's cool. But I'm like, I mean, guys, Pearl Jam. It's like, this is not a band I'm listening to, you know, regularly today. But once I got into it, I was like, what a wonderful band. Great. Hit makers.
I was not one of them that actively sought their music, but if it was playing, I'd listen to it.
But when you when you're trying to collect, like, it's a band where if you're trying to collect, like, all right, let me make a playlist for somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about. Like, you're like, oh wow, these are all really, really good.
It's funny that you say playlist, because we used to say mixtape.
Well, that's what it is. Yeah. That's I just now sent him an Apple Music link.
Yeah, my music link would probably be all over the place. I have a very eclectic playlist.
Which... Well, there are no candle blocks.
That's no. Sure.
I went through a phase where I was very much into a lot of the Seattle underground bands that were signed by major labels in the grunge heyday to kind of find the next Nirvana or the next, you know, like just signing anybody and like giving them 3-4 contract deals, just hoping
like this band honey.
My favorite one of them is a band called Tuscadero. Like they made two albums.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But them. Like they're great. But like they tried to be like, well, what if we took their exact same album and we just they put a good producer or expensive producer on it, and it's like, oh, this like killed all the fun. It's fun though. It's a weird period of time.
I mean, that's the thing though. Like youth have always used music and the music culture subcultures as an identifier, but also as a meet point where you can meet like-minded people where like, oh, you're into so-and-so that you're one notch in that like acceptable, you know, a slider. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, one over. Once you reach all the way, we can be friends. No, I mean, that's how people still think the same way.
That's very much so.
But you know what people think about on this show are...
Titles, yeah. That one.
And all the other things. But yes, since we're on the subject of titles, let's talk about our three best vote getters. Zoe Brings Bacon suggested Speed Bumps Do Matter. Stealth Dave suggested Let's Talk About Meta and Their Users. And Larry in Atlanta, the top vote getter, the Google Glass of game streaming. What did we go with?
We went with Stealth Dave's. Poor Meta. What an underdog.
Yeah.
I'm saying that for Meta, not the selection of the title. I'm like,
It's a good title. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, it might not be long from now that we actually say, oh, poor Meta. Remember when?
They try so hard.
I don't think anyone's ever going to say poor Meta. No,
but maybe remember when?
Yes.
Over on the GDI side, Larry in Atlanta submitted A Half-Naked Man Saunters Across the Bedroom.
Oh, the best.
Yeah, one of
my... There could be so many things in my mind.
Horrible nightmares.
I mean, if you had an audiobook, you should start it with that opening line. I won't even charge you.
Stealth Dave was in number two spot with Grilled Cheese Reminisces. And Larry in Atlanta also had the number one spot with 6 votes. That's a different Patreon level.
We went with Larry in Atlanta, but not the ones we just mentioned. We picked Explosive Grilled Cheese Sandwich. When you add the word explosive to any food item, it's just comedy.
It just makes it sound so much better. I am having kind of a weird issue logging into Patreon. So I want to thank our... some of our bosses that gave us raises because they did, but I need a minute unless anybody could do that.
Well, while you're searching for that, let's go thank everyone in the Twitch chat for supporting us. We have RCB Goose and CPOT50 for resubscribing, Beatmaster, Larry in Atlanta, TF87, Aldi. Zoe Brings Bacon, Larry in Atlanta, and Beatmaster for cheering on with so many bits. Thank you all, because, you know, it really does help us each and every time.
Sure does. Okay, over on the Patreon side, I'm back in business. We had thanked our new patrons, and thank you so much for being part of the team. We did get some raises. Derek Silva gave us a raise. That might have been something we talked about on Friday, but if not, thanking you again. We also got a raise from Richard Hansen. Thank you so much, Richard. And we got a that's it. those are our raises. We did get a lot of new patrons, and as Tom mentions, certain times of the year are hard for folks. You know, there's only so much money. Money is finite, and we really, really appreciate you supporting us and those of you who can contribute a little bit more every month or on an annual basis. So, so very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And with that,
yeah, well,
I think it might be time.
Yeah, we'll see you guys tomorrow with Rob Dunwood.
Yeah, yeah, Rob Dunwood,
amazing.
Columbus.
And until then, we'll have a good day.
Yeah, have a good day, everybody.